Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to episode 171 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we catch up with Karen and Mayena from the Unplugged Early Years Movement. We talk about the impact of digital screens on young children and, of course, key things to consider as part of EYFS practice. So there's lots here. Here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Karen and Mayena from Unplugged Early Years. Welcome along to the podcast, both of you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's great that you could join us. It really is. I thought we'd start with an introduction, if that's all right. Would you mind introducing yourselves for me? Would that be okay?
I'll go first because Mayena's got all the early years accreditation. My name's Karen. I work under the name St. Albans Mums, and I have an online presence with a Facebook group and an Instagram page, which has been about 8 years now. And so through my sort of career of marketing and social media, I've built that up, and now there's about 10,000 followers on there, all local ladies. I'd like to say most of them are mums. So yeah, that's my audience. And then I met Mayena this year, and well, properly, we knew of each other. And yeah, we set up this movement just through the love of wanting to get children back on track.
Brilliant. Brilliant. It sounds really interesting what you do.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's sort of happened very quickly so far.
Yeah, and that sounds really interesting. And it's brought you into contact with Mayena. And I know, Mayena, your background is very different to that. Can you tell us about your background?
Yeah, so I'm an old school NNEB nursery nurse, qualified 34 years ago, and my whole background has been in early years. I'm now a nursery owner, and I also have a consultancy brand on the side of that as well, where I support parents, carers and nursery owners and practitioners to be able to be more effective in their practice and make sure that their nurseries are running the way they want them to. And also just helping parents as well to understand if we meet children where they're at rather than putting our adult expectations onto small children, then the outcomes will always be much better for everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, interesting what you were saying about your NNEB qualification. To me, that's a real mark of quality. I think when you...
I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, you should be, definitely. When I go to settings and there is somebody there with an NNEB qualification, I know they're going to be in a good place because they've got such a depth of understanding. They always have, you know, such a depth of understanding, that real breadth of understanding in terms of child development, and what young children need, and have a real eye for quality. You know, it's I think we rush the process of training early years teachers and practitioners really at our peril. And what I love about the NNEB training is that it takes it really in small steps and really builds that quality.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And what I it's really interesting because every single day I use my NNEB, right up until this day, every single day I have kind of tutors ringing in my ear telling me, you know, hearing things that they would have said to me all those, you know, 36 years ago when I started. But you're right. They were very clear that when it came round to our final exam, we wouldn't need to revise because if it hadn't been drummed into us over the 2 years, we were never going to learn it because they just made sure that they kept repeating and making sure that you understood what, you know, what the content was. But you're right, it was a real deep dive into child development. And I think that is what's lacking now.
Yes.
I saw when I joined Mayena in her setting, I've not been to a setting like that before, like how the staff are so happy. They're always on it. I mean, they sing all day long. It's incredible. And they all have such great relationships. The children are so happy and it's so calm. I've not seen that before another setting that I might have been to. So I knew then that was the right place to work with.
Absolutely. I think effective practice is to a certain extent something that you can feel when you're walking through the door. that you feel that engagement from the children, you feel that security and confidence in the staff. It sort of oozes quality, really. It's not just about what the children are doing. It's about the engagement. It's about the quality of the environment overall. And by that overall environment, I mean the emotional environment as well as the physical environment. You know, you can feel that security, that confidence, that warmth, really.
Yeah. So,
I mean, we're trusted with people's most valuable possessions. I hate to use that word, but you know, there you don't get any more valuable than somebody's child, and it's an honor and a privilege for me every day that people trust me to care for their small children. And the biggest part of my work is investing in my team so that they understand the privilege that they have and they get to be part of somebody's upbringing. And I think if we don't get the personal, social and emotional right, nothing else is ever going to feel right, because if a child doesn't feel safe and secure, they're never going to learn. And you know, for me, it's an old cliche, but a happy child will learn. And so we focus on all of those old-fashioned fundamentals, making sure that they feel safe and secure and they're happy and they know their key person and they know all of the adults. And then also on top of that, we're teaching manners, morals, respect, consent, all of those key things that you need to take you through, you know, those life skills, really.
And interesting, a lot of those sorts of, if you like, life skills and the warmth and engagement, a lot of that actually is something that we're going to probably touch on, I would think, as we talk about what we're talking about today. And that is, we're going to be talking about your movement. We're going to be talking about the movement, which is Unplugged Early Years, and about technology within families, within settings, technology being used by young children, and some positives, but also the negative impact or potential negative impact of all of that. Before we get on to all of that, which I think is really interesting, it's really close to my heart. I was really delighted, you know, when you got in touch and you were keen to talk about this on the podcast. You know, I grabbed the opportunity with both hands because it is very much close to my heart what we're going to talk about. Before we get on to all of that, tell us about the movement itself. You know, there must have been a particular starting point, the germ of an idea, and also what it is. Could you do that? Would that be okay?
I think the germ of the idea came from Karen and I's passion about potential mistakes we felt we'd made with our older children. Karen has an 18-year-old. I have a 21-year-old, and then we've both got slightly younger children as well. And I know that definitely with my current 14-year-old, I definitely feel like I wasn't present enough whilst kind of building my nursery business. And he's had far too much exposure to tech for one reason or another. And so I thought, instead of, I can't change that in as big a way as I would like to for him. Of course, I'm making small steps with that, but it really then kind of born was this idea that, hang on, let's really look at the early years, because I'm a big believer in you have to start from day one, even pregnancy, getting this right for our small children, and they just deserve the best. And I think you'd probably agree that early years is massively undervalued by everybody, and we nobody really sees the importance of it. And I think it's fundamental to everything that happens in your life. So it kind of was just born around conversations like that, and then we just went from there, really, didn't we? And it just kind of grew.
Yeah, it's for me, it's very interesting because I've not worked in childcare or early years before. So for me, I read in all the stats side of it, I'm finding out that there actually isn't that many stats around early years and tech use. So we sort of had the strapline, we're connecting children in a disconnected world. And I guess from that, we've kind of compiled all these different elements. So there's going to be a pledge, there's going to be ambassadors, and we're going to try and bring this movement to the UK, hopefully, if not global, so that I can work with Myona and Lee, our other co-founder, and we can bring this to parents at any different stage, whether they're actually parents or pregnant or actually just thinking about their life choices and looking at this movement, all of us together.
Yes. So would you say it's something that's mainly aimed at parents, or is it aimed in a broader sense than that? Is it more open than that?
Yeah, I think initially my brain was saying parents because I've got an 11 and an 8-year-old. So I'm very much in it at that point of my life. But since then, we've met other people who are now ambassadors that, you know, they're not yet married. They haven't yet thought about having children, or they haven't thought about their future life, but they're so invested in protecting what they now know the outcome could potentially cost, like a child's development. So yeah, I think we need to get in there right from the beginning.
And I think for me as well, as a nursery owner and kind of being privy to a community of nursery owners, I see a lot amongst practitioners about, you know, the need from management to write X amount of observations a week and sit on iPads. And I made a bold move recently and just removed, about 2 or 3 months ago, removed all iPads from the nursery floor. So I have 3 rooms in my nursery, and each room had an iPad for them to take photos, send messages. We use a nursery software app called Family, and we communicate with parents, and we'd always prided ourselves on a, you know, really strong communication, and that's very important to me. However, not at the cost of the interaction with the child. And since the EYFS was reformed that we don't have to do written observations, I've just stopped it, because my other kind of bone of contention is I was taught properly on my NNEB how to write an observation. Practitioners are not being taught how to write observations. So my kind of argument is, if it's not a quality observation, then who is it for? And parents don't understand child development, most parents, on a deep level. So we're doing something that ultimately nobody's reading, when that time could have been really invested with the children and creating those bonds and those really strong interactions. So I just thought, it's a fundamental stage of development that when a child looks up, a young child looks up at an adult, they should be met by their gaze. It's a developmental milestone. And this is being missed now, because what's happening is young children are looking up and being met by an adult looking down at a phone. And that's where I feel like human connection is being lost. And that kind of ignited a fire inside me that I thought, I need to be part of a movement that makes change for our future generations, because I'm seeing such a disconnect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think lots of us are aware of that, but it's almost like a kind of, it feels a bit like a sort of a Pandora's box has been opened, that technology is suddenly there and it's part of everybody's lives in a huge way. You know, it's not just sort of, it's not just having a phone, it's having, you know, sort of Alexa as well. And then also, you know, it's every single bit of your life potentially is linked to your phone or some form of technology, from your alarm clock in the morning, which is often set on people's phones, to your diary, to the map that tells you how to get to where you're going that day, to, you know, absolutely every, you know, fitness apps and all sorts of different things to do with breathing and heartbeats and food and nutrition. It's almost like every single minute of the day is now linked to some form of technology. And whilst there are certainly positives with that, undoubtedly there are positives with that, it can get a bit much, I think, sometimes. Really.
And that kind of leads really nicely into what Karen and I say to everybody when we're doing our talks. We do a lot of kind of pop-up events and talks. We're not anti-tech, we're pro-childhood. And it's about saving those early years and not turning around when you've got an 8, an 11-year-old and an 18-year-old and saying, I wasn't there enough, I missed out. I can't, like, for me now, I think I desperately wish I could claw back those years, and not even just in terms of tech use, because my daughter at 21 didn't have kind of any tech really until 10, 11 years old. I was a bit late to the game with her, funnily enough. But I think it's not just about the tech use. Childhood goes so quickly, and I think we're finding that teenagers start at 10 now rather than 13. So I think if we can just be more present and in the moment with our children and the children that we're privileged enough to spend time around, then I think every little you know, percent that we are more consciously present is a percentage move in the right direction.
It applies in all social situations now as well. They're coined the new word fubbing. So it's about having a phone. What do they call it? And it's about not socializing. So they put that together and it's called fubbing. So you'd rather have your phone in any scenario, not even just with your children, than not speak to people. So it's about finding times where you can take that out of this situation. And hopefully, I think if all things go well and our movement moves forward, that will just be the norm, reinventing itself again, coming back to like, why would I have my phone in my hand when I'm having dinner with somebody? Why would I be on my phone when I'm reading a book to my child? It's a very strange concept.
I think it is really interesting because it does cover every aspect of life pretty much. You know, so I went to a gig with my youngest son just a couple of weeks ago in Manchester. And so we saw Pulp, who are a band that I used to absolutely love when I was much, much younger than I am now, and who my youngest son absolutely loves. And so we went to a gig in Manchester at the Co-op Arena, lucky enough to get tickets. We were right at the back, okay? But interestingly, and we absolutely loved it, but what I couldn't help but notice was I'd seen Pulp sort of 30-odd years before. Okay, so in the 1990s, I'd seen them. And what I couldn't help but notice is the differences between the crowds and that in similar kinds of size of crowds. And in the 1990s, it was much more physical, much, much more physical. And not necessarily in a positive way, but it was, you know, much, much more physical. People were absolutely moving to the music every step of the way and to the point where actually people were over the top of it, of the crowd and all sorts of things. And whereas in this particular gig, as brilliant as it was, and it was wonderful, the crowd didn't move as much. And I think part of that is actually that so many people had their phones out, which of course is a precious possession. And you are guarding the phone whilst also watching the gig. And because of that, you're not quite as present. And it's a similar sort of thing, I think, to what we're talking about here. You know, if you're going to pay a lot of money to go to a gig like that, but still not quite be present, you know, that does say quite a lot, actually. I think when it then comes down to parenting or other really important things in your life, that actually you're prepared to still not quite be present in.
I saw an interview with Liam Gallagher the other day, and he was saying that obviously they've just reformed, haven't they, and done some pretty big gigs, but he was saying that it was so different to when they played Nebworth in the 90s, he said, because nobody at these new gigs was present. Everybody was watching the concert through their phone rather than, he said, in the 90s when you were playing to all those people, he said, everyone was there with you and everyone was enjoying it in the moment. And he said, it just took the love of what he does out of, I mean, they're not my personal cup of tea. He said it just took the love out of it. And he said, it just makes me not want to do that anymore.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? It is really interesting. Going back to what you were talking about just before, you were talking about that idea of being present in parenting and, of course, when children look up and expect an adult to be there kind of holding their gaze and being interested and showing that open body language and being present and involved and engaged with them. You can't help but think that I think that that has an impact partly on relationships, but I think also on communication and language, which for me is an interesting thing. In the last few years, I've talked a lot about the different needs that are now coming through within schools and earlier settings, the needs of the children. And there's no doubt about it, you know, the needs of the children are different now to where they were probably 5 years ago. However, the more that actually this time goes on, the more I can't help but start to question whether this is all about the pandemic or whether actually this was something that was there already and the pandemic is just too convenient to blame it on. Because actually, we're still seeing this need and we're now past 5 years since the pandemic. We're still seeing this need of children coming into our schools and settings. it's not all, it can't all be about the pandemic. I appreciate some of it probably is. But the, what really got me to think about it was, a couple of months ago, I talked to a lovely lady called Lizzie Battersby on the podcast. And we were talking about something completely different. We were talking about story bags and within them materials and resources, open-ended materials for parents to use to play with children and to explore together and to start off that communication journey by being together and present and playing together. And Lizzie said, very interestingly, she said that she, in their school, they had data going back to 2008 on communication and language for the children on entry to their setting. And that she said that since that point, you have seen a decline year on year in terms of communication and language skills. And that's way before the pandemic. And it's very interesting that actually that also fits with the rise of technology. That I think it was, I'm no expert on this, but I think it's, was it 2008 when the iPhone, I think, really became huge?
But we had Facebook then, which I think was the only form of social media really then. I think I joined Facebook in 2008. So even though there wasn't the social media in the way it is now, it was still that first distraction. And then I think the iPhone came out not long after that. And then that's what I remember, the hype around the iPhone, and it was going to be like, you're going to carry a computer around with you that will, you know, literally do everything you ever need it to do. But I'm wholeheartedly with you, and I've been banging this drum for years, that the pandemic has been a really convenient excuse for the demise in communication and language. And I think screen time and technology in general has been a massive distraction for the adults, and therefore, because I think there were many, many families in COVID whose children would have benefited massively from being around and having that connection. I know certainly my setting was closed down for 9 weeks because of, you know, health conditions within my household. So we weren't able to operate for 9 whole weeks. So that was, I was really present and around with my children and doing whatever we could, going on the daily walks and having a lot of conversations that I think it's the minority of families that COVID was impacted. I think screen time, social media, all of those things are much more likely to be the cause for the international delay in speech and language. But I don't know why it's convenient, but it's interesting that Lizzie has actual data for that. And that, I'd really like to learn a bit more about that, because I definitely agree.
It is very interesting. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, nothing is ever sort of as black and white, is it? You know, that actually there will be elements of the pandemic that I'm sure caused, you know, issues and have caused issues. And certainly things like habits in terms of social media. I think that actually at that particular point, people got very used to scrolling. And scrolling, of course, is addictive and is carried on from that point. So it's kind of got us into habits to a certain extent. So yes, communication language, quite an interesting aspect to this, and the kind of the knock-on effect. But also, I think, as you just mentioned, social media and social media pressure. Social media, I think, again, can be really positive. You know, again, we're not against tech, you know, against the idea of using technology in any way. But we do see an impact of it in terms of parents. And we also, I think, see an impact of social media on practice, which I think, again, is something we don't talk about that much. Should we start with parents? You're working, of course, Maiana, in your setting. What's the impact that you see in terms of parents and using social media?
Well, I think, firstly, I feel incredibly sad for the majority of parents, because I think societally there is a pressure that comes from social media use, that all of these people are doing things really well and perfectly, and they've all got beautiful houses, and you know, their children are beautifully dressed in white clothing, and you know, everything is perfect. And I'm just trying to reach out to parents and say, look, this is not real life. They're not showing you you know, what actually the majority of their day, they're showing you a real snippet of the day, and it's staged. And I actually think it's really dangerous for the well-being of a lot of particularly new parents, because I think, You've got mums that are feeling really stressed, dads that don't know how to support those mums at the best of times, let alone in this, you know, societally pressured world. So I think for me, I just want to say to people, just do you and try to block out all of that outside noise from social media, because nobody is living like that. Everybody feels overwhelmed at times. Everybody feels anxious at times about certain situations. And nobody's child sleeps through the night from the minute they're born. They're not being truthful. And I think that's where the danger comes, because then it leaves people feeling inadequate. And that's something that I help support parents with, and just help to guide them through and think, how many parts of your day could you tick off as a little win or a success? And let's focus on that. You've got a happy, healthy child that is, you know, fed, and they're sleeping sometimes. And I think it's about, again, educating people to understand, both parents and practitioners, to understand that every child's an individual in the same way every adult is. And I think the reason I'm so passionate about what I do is that adults invalidate children because they're small, but they're human beings. They're just small human beings. They have all the same thought processes. They just don't have the emotional maturity to process those thoughts. And I think that's kind of where I feel sad for people with the distraction of social media. You know, you're told to sit on the naughty step. Now that's out of date. Something else comes in. You never quite know where you're at.
Yes. Yeah. It can be bewildering. I think parenting can be bewildering at the best of times. And I don't think necessarily social media provides the support that people think it does. I think quite often people follow people who think, oh, yes, you know, I get what I need from these different people. But as you rightly say, it's often, very often, just not an accurate picture of what really happens. And that's hard. I think we're always self-conscious as parents, that it never quite feels like we're doing it right anyway. And I think you add into that perfect social media accounts, and I think that just builds that impression if we're not careful.
It's an aesthetic, isn't it? So it's almost like there's noise in one ear, building an aesthetic you can't actually hope to achieve. I unfollow people quite a bit now because I think, I mean, I've been on Instagram since it first launched and I love it. It's like up my job and I get quite a lot from it. But yeah, it's the aesthetic. I know when I see someone, and actually my thing's probably to the gym. So I did go to the gym and now I don't. So actually now these people, I'm like, actually I've been to the gym now, but it was never like that. I didn't look like that when I was there, and I never will look like that when I get home. So yeah, I've had to cut that aesthetic noise out of my own being. So imagine what my children are seeing at such young ages. It's scary.
It is scary, I think. Yeah, potentially. Yeah, absolutely. And then let's then have a think beyond that pressure on parents, then in terms of earlier settings and earlier practitioners. Let's start with social media in terms of practitioners. I've certainly seen in the time that I've been working in terms of going into schools, supporting teachers and practitioners to develop their practice, I've certainly seen a difference. And the difference being, I think that we now, certainly over the last probably 5 to 10 years, I think I see a lot more people now focusing on very short-term things. So lots of things that get brought out of the cupboard for 1 week only, set out, then at the end of the week, put away again for something else to take its place. And when you start to question that, some of what lies behind that is that social media pressure, that it's about actually something that is fresh and new and grabbing the children's attention, that actually I can really grab, that make it look exciting for this week only, which I think goes back to what we were saying right at the beginning. I think in order to be successful in terms of early childhood education, you need a real grounding in what quality looks like. And that grounding is actually about things that are interesting and fascinating to the children, that don't come and go, that aren't there for 1 minute and gone again and just to excite them, but actually there for a long period of time, and that children develop security and confidence in knowing that those quality resources are there for a longer period of time. And I think this that focus, which I think some is partly fueled by social media, on things that are just there to grab attention and there to be eye-catching, I think is often impractical. You know, I've seen lots of things like, you know, every time there is some kind of national celebration, tough trays filled with coloured rice. You know, I'm not kidding, but anybody who's worked in a nursery or any earlier setting will know that that is not going to stay anything like that for seconds. And the amount of time that goes into it, you know, it's ridiculous. Well, I think, personally. So I wondered about, that's my very opinionated side on it.
So I can be very opinionated too. I will try and remain professional.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? I mean, presumably, that's exactly at the heart of what you're talking about when you're talking about unplumbed early years, is it?
Yeah, and it's about understanding from a practitioner and kind of nursery owners and school-based nurseries, that kind of EYFS leads. It's about understanding how important it is to have rich, deep, continuous provision so that your room should be set up in such a way that the children can self-select, and you know your children so well that you're able to track their interests and plot their next steps from that. So we're very much about kind of, we do planning loosely around books. Our planning tends to be around a story, and then we plan off that. But it is very in the moment, and we use whiteboards, and we just take a second to scribble down something on a whiteboard that we might have noticed a child, even if they're not our key children, will have taken an interest in. But that's because our continuous provision is so deep and rich, and they're able to self-select. And also those items that are in the continuous provision, the way the rooms are set up, you know, we have three zones. We have a home area, which is half the room, because we shouldn't be squashing children into a home corner like we used to do years ago. It should be, you know, available, and it should replicate home. So we have a big sofa, we have a bed and a chest of drawers, and we have a kitchen area. And then we invite the family in, so with family trees and photos and pictures of children's favorite food and even what's in their fridges, so that makes the child feel familiar. Therefore, they're safe and they're secure. But they're also, the resources that they're using are their interest, but they're also so familiar. And I think what is lost a lot in early years is the understanding from new practitioners. And when I say new, I'm talking even about in the last 20 years since the demise of like the NNEB and things like that, is the understanding of repetition creates confidence. You know, you don't just do something once and then put that activity away. You have to repeat that. You may be bored with doing something. The child will never get bored. And if you're a good enough practitioner, you will know different ways to switch and change that up to extend the learning, offer a different way to make marks, for example, not just always with a paintbrush. We rarely ever use paintbrushes at my nursery because there are so many other wonderful things to use. But I think with regards to what you were talking about, tokenism, you know, it's this day, so we're going to do this. I'm not a fan of it at all. We do certain things throughout the year, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Christmas, and those are things that are mementos that are sent home for parents, because I think that's important to look back over the years about, you know, a little handprint from your child with a nice poem. And I think there's a compromise there for me, but I don't need to celebrate every day. There's a day for something. And there is a particularly relatively recent theorist that has evolved that kind of demonize all of that. And they demonize plastic and they demonize lots of things in early years. It's not a particular thing that I like to follow, but I won't name them. But I think it's what we need to understand is it's not about, they're very good at setting up invitations and provocations that are very Insta-worthy. And I know by looking at it as an experienced practitioner that will last 3.9 seconds before it's absolutely trashed. And nobody's actually had any play value from that. And it's in a nursery setting, they're setting up things that are just for an individual child at home. If you've got 20 toddlers in a room, that particular activity, like I say, is going to last no time whatsoever. The value is then lost, not that there was any in the first place, So it's things like that we need to be mindful of. Look, I support a nursery owner as part of my consultancy role. And she was talking me through her planning last week, and she was telling me about, and I'm going to put this on the tough tray. And I said, stop, talk to me about the three I's. What's your intent? Well, I'm going to do this, this, it. And I said, who's it for? And she couldn't answer. And I said, it's for you. Scrap it. Get rid of the tough tray. Put some water in the tough tray. Put some sand in the tough tray. Put some sensory something in the tough tray. I said, but stop making all of this beautiful displays that you can then click, 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 put it on Instagram. There's no value to it.
No, absolutely. But that comes from, I think people who are reflective practitioners will question every single thing about their practice. So they'll question, well, why have I got a tough tray? You know, what is it that brings that a table doesn't bring, or that the floor, even better, the floor, you know, that actually children will naturally play on the floor far more than they will want to play at anything that is, well, depending on the activity, but usually anything that is a tough tray or a table, particularly tough trays outdoors. You know, it's just, you're just asking children to stand still when really what they want to do is move and explore and use their bodies. You know, it doesn't really fit. And so I think if you're a reflective practitioner, you question, well, why the tough tray? You even question, particularly if you're working with our youngest children, you know, do we need a smart board? Do we need that on the wall? I've worked with many schools and settings recently because, of course, 2 to 3 year old provision has really expanded over the last year or so, and in many cases in schools. I've worked with many schools who are just on autopilot, and that they are just creating classrooms for very young children, and they just say, of course, we'll need an interactive whiteboard. And, you know, I think it's important to question it. You know, the World Health Organization guidelines for screen time for young children from birth to 2 in terms of time in 24 hours is zero. Zero screen time in 24 hours for any 2-year-old.
As it should be.
And I think, well, we are on autopilot some of the time, providing technology when those children are not going to benefit from it, that they need to be doing other things. And yet we just provide it because we have this sense that this is what we should have.
I think also people take it literally, and again, and not to, you know, I'm not kind of looking down upon those people that are inexperienced. I've got lots of apprentices in my setting, and you don't know until you've got years in, you can't have that experience. And I was that person, you know, back in the day. The difference was I had such a gold star kind of educational start to my journey. But I think the problem is people take things so literally. So in the EYFS, there is a section about promoting technology and the use of technology. So people just think, oh, that means a screen. In my setting, we work together. The children stack the dishwasher. They know how to turn that on. The children load the laundry. They collect all the laundry. We use face cloths for wiping faces after lunch and et cetera. They will go round in teams. We have laundry monitors, and they will go and they'll load the machine. They'll put in the liquid with support, and they will know how to operate that washing machine. That's tech. They don't need to sit on a screen. You know, switches and dials our technology. And, you know, even we have, we were doing a Jack and the Beanstalk, and I had a really beautiful trailing plant in my office. And so the children planted some beans in preschool. And then overnight I moved the plant, and they came back the next morning and they thought that was, you know, Jack's beans. And now it's trailing up on the ceiling. And there's a little thing in the soil that tells you it's red when it needs water and green when it's got enough to drink. That's technology. The children are always coming up to me and telling me that, you know, Jack's beans, the plant, the beanstalk, it needs a drink. And then so they've got access to water. Go and get a jug and fill it up until it's green. And you know you're able to read those kind of early tech signs. I don't need to do that for them.
Yes. Yeah. And it's practical, isn't it? And meaningful. And about active learning and within a range of different meaningful contexts. It's not just sitting down and just being passive. It's actually about using technology in a useful way. So, yeah, I'm all for it. And I think need to look beyond just a screen, beyond just an iPad, and really think, well, actually, how can technology be used in a rich way to really, really engage our children in different ways?
I think it's interesting as well that there's such a heavy focus on technology within the EYFS, but less focus on how many hours a young child is supposed to spend outdoors. We have a very outdoor ethos at my nursery. We're outdoors from 9 till 5:30 every day, whatever the weather. And we've got a veranda coming off our building that I had built so that they can have fresh air all year round. And our children actually sleep outside all year round on raised beds. And the importance of fresh air and exercise and getting small children are supposed to move their bodies. They're not supposed to sit. So, you know, it's as well, when we've finished a mealtime, we stack up the chairs. So if they're doing a tabletop activity, there is not a chair for them to sit down at. They're not supposed to be confined. And it's also about you. I use an analogy that a friend of mine said once, and I thought that's so true and interesting. You don't have to look at the radio to hear what's on. And it's like when you're reading a story to a room full of children, just because a young child might not be sat on the carpet with their legs crossed, arms folded, finger on lip, doesn't mean they're not taking in that story, doesn't mean that information's not going in, and we shouldn't invalidate them because they're not doing as you've told them to do. So I just think it's, again, it's about creating a deeper understanding of how children learn.
Yes. No, absolutely is. And it goes back to what we were saying before about being that reflective practitioner, doesn't it? That somebody who's really thinking about, well, what does the practice need to be like to get to where we want to be in terms of these children? What do we want our children to grow and become, you know, in terms of security, in terms of confidence, in terms of engagement, in terms of communication and language skills, in terms of those characteristics of effective learning and everything that's involved in that, and how much of that happens through a screen, not that much of it. You know, as you said very early on in this conversation, childhood goes in the blink of an eye. And I think time that isn't being used wisely needs to be kind of rethought, really. We need to reframe it and think about it differently. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, I think. Fascinating. I'm sure lots of people will be listening to this and thinking, well, actually, do you know what? This strikes a chord with me. It certainly, when we chatted before, it struck a chord with me. I am sure lots of people will be listening to this and thinking, well, actually, do you know what? We have gone a bit down the rabbit hole with technology within our setting. We're not just right. You know, we're not in the right place in terms of how we're using technology. We're maybe not reflecting on it enough, but I completely agree with where you're at. For people who would like to get involved in some way with Unplugged Early Years or to find out more about it, where can they start?
So we've built a website, and within that website we offer free resources. So you have the option to find out certain things that we feel are relevant in the press, for instance, that we're going to share. We're also adding more resources every day around our main jobs, and they could be downloads from a local person who's sort of given us their content to share on. We then have a pledge. Our pledge is not, obviously, we're very pro-tech. I'm very pro-tech, we all are. And it's basically about just delaying the screen time that you're offering children. Like you've just quoted the stat that between 0 and 2, there should be none. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And then there seems to be this void between age 3 to 5. So we're sort of thinking between birth and 5, delay it. You know, if you're on it for work, you have your work emails. You know, when it comes to bedtime, when it comes to dinner time, bath time, take that phone out of the equation. So that's our pledge. That's what we're asking people to do. Look at meaningful times during the day where you can say, right, I don't need my tech for half an hour. It's just half an hour. You know, once the children were in bed, it doesn't, you know, you could do what you like, for instance. And then off the back of that, we've started to get loads of ambassadors really interested. So they might be practitioners, the family centre staff. We've been speaking to MPs just to get this out there, to fill the void, because there are other really great setups, which appeal, in my opinion, to primary senior schools. But it's almost like we need to talk to people about that time before primary school, because that's the main time, especially if they do have children in a setting, because that person there, you would hope, would have the same ethos as you at home. So yeah, I guess the website is a good one to start with. Have a read through the pledge, see if that aligns. If you would like to become more involved, and the involvement is literally just talking to one person, it could start from that. We can provide you with information. We'd like to have people all across the country supporting this. And then, yeah, you know, we can pop up at schools, which we have been doing. We're going to host other events. And yeah, it's about getting the word out there. Support, that's what we need to give people.
Yeah, it's interesting and exciting. I think you're at such an interesting stage here, aren't you? You're really just getting started with it and really building something. But I'm sure certainly that people who've listened to this, I think many people will be absolutely on board with it.
Yeah, everyone you're speaking to has such a great opinion of like, oh, I haven't thought of that. Or yeah, that's where it's really affected. So I guess that's why we're not limiting our ambassadors. We're going to have as many as possible. And they can come from any walk of life. It's just about getting the support from people who understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what we will do is there is always podcast information. So we have our podcast title and then the some information about the episode, and then below that links that people can go to click on and go straight to. And what we'll do is we'll put your website link onto that and any other information as well, so that people can find out more when they listen to the episode. Myana and Karen, it's been brilliant to talk to you today. It's been really interesting in terms of the movement, but also actually we've talked about a lot in terms of effective practice as well, that I'm sure people will have found interesting too. Thank you so much for joining us. All the very best for Unplugged Early Years. It sounds absolutely great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Karen and Myana for joining us for the podcast this week. Really interesting conversation. I'm sure lots of you out there will have found that really interesting. There's a lot there for us to reflect on, isn't there? This is our last episode of the school year. So, of course, we need to say a very big thank you to you people out there for listening along. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast this school year. And also thank you very much to everybody who's joined us as a guest on the podcast during this school year. And all that remains to be said really is have a brilliant break, everybody. Have a super summer, a wonderful time off, enjoy your rest, a very well-deserved rest, and we will see you for new episodes back in September for the start of the new school year. Over the summer, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be putting out some re-released episodes for you to listen to if you would like to. But we will see you for more new episodes in September. All right. Take care, everybody. Have a great summer break, and we will see you in September.